cumulative CO2 emissions.
However, a study from Imperial College London has concluded that if planes flew at slightly different altitudes, it would lessen the effect of those white streaks.
That's because they form and persist only in thin layers of the atmosphere that have very high humidity. Shifting flight altitudes 2,000 feet higher or lower would mean fewer contrails.
This, the researchers say, combined with using cleaner aircraft engines, could reduce contrail-caused harm to the climate by up to 90%.
The studies show that shifting altitude caused a slight increase in fuel consumption, but the reduced contrail formation more than offset the CO2 released by the extra fuel. So, one day you might hear,
"This is your captain speaking. We're changing altitude to save the planet." In addition to its beauty, the natural world provides benefits we all depend on, from water supply and fisheries to crop pollination and carbon storage. And according to a new report, the loss of nature would take a huge economic toll across the globe.
In a study called Global Futures, researchers calculated the economic cost of the loss of nature in 140 countries and found that under a business-as-usual scenario, the U.S. economy alone would lose more than $80 billion each year.
The study conducted by the World Wildlife Fund said that with continued land use trends and increases in greenhouse gas emissions, the world would lose almost $500 billion a year, roughly the equivalent of the economies of the UK, France, India, and Brazil combined.
But if land use is carefully managed to avoid further loss of biodiversity and protections are put in place for ecosystems, economic outcomes would be dramatically better, with global GDP rising by $490 billion per year.
The point? If governments act urgently to halt the loss of nature and tackle the climate emergency, not only could disastrous outcomes be averted, but economies could benefit as well.
The office of British Prime Minister Boris Johnson disclosed last week that government officials are considering building a bridge between Scotland and Northern Ireland.
According to MarketWatch, Johnson has promised to build major new infrastructure to better connect parts of the UK in the wake of Brexit.
The bridge would span about 28 miles in cost, an estimated $26 billion. But in addition to its huge price tag, it has another problem: bombs.
The possible routes would span a vast munitions dump that lies at the bottom of the Irish Sea, where Allied and German bombs were dumped during the Second World War.
The trench not only contains unexploded bombs, but also nuclear and chemical waste, all of which could be disturbed or dislodged by building bridge pilings.
About 20 years ago, the construction of a gas pipeline in the area resulted in thousands of bombs being washed ashore, some of which exploded when they dried out.
It's not certain if the bridge, which some are calling a Boris Johnson vanity project, will ever get past the initial idea stage. And finally, how you wash your dishes might affect climate change.
Most of us would expect that modern dishwashers are energy efficient and use less water than washing dishes by hand. But according to researchers at the University of Michigan, that's not always the case.
People who wash dishes manually fall into two camps: those who wash and rinse dishes under a steady stream of hot water, and those who use the less common two-basin method, in which dishes are soaked and scrubbed in hot water and then rinsed and cold.
And that latter group, the two-basin crowd, they bested dishwashers by producing 18% lower greenhouse gas emissions.
But people don't have to give up dishwashers. They're associated with less than half the greenhouse gas emissions and use less than half the water of washing dishes by hand under a running tap.
And the researchers had some tips to reduce the appliance's environmental impact. For example, they say you don't have to pre-rinse dishes.
And don't select the heat-dry setting or choose the heavy cycle over a normal wash unless you have a super tough load.
That's it for this week in water. We'll see you next time.
Julian Assange's attorney claimed in court today that President Trump offered to pardon Assange if he would say that there was no Russian involvement in the 2016 hacking of the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign. Allegedly, former U.S. Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher made the offer when he visited Assange in August of 2017, while he was still in the Ecuadorian embassy. In September 2017, the White House confirmed that Rohrabacher had called the then Chief of Staff John Kelly to talk about a possible deal with Assange. Assange's court case to prevent his extradition to the U.S. begins next week in London.
KBOO's news poet Dan Raphael fears our democracy is infected.
Couple sunny days, but hard to see the blossoming spring with the plagues of dishonesty and greed becoming pandemic. The UK announced plans to clamp down on immigration, almost admitting that, yeah, this is what Brexit was about. I heard the owner of the Houston Astros caught in a cheating scandal, lying his way around the facts, denying something he'd said just minutes earlier. I thought only ranking Republicans had caught the lying bug, but now I see the Donny virus is the biggest threat to planetary health. How better for a plague to spread than one whose first symptom is not only thinking you're okay, but that you're the best ever. A delusional disease, making all facts irrelevant except what's coming out of infected mouths and media. Meanwhile, our big election is shaping up like a world where the only restaurants are McDonald's and Burger King's. We know the chain in charge these 3 years is making us sick, while its competitor is denying all its former menus and promising to feed us better. Do we die of malnutrition or starvation? Do we fight each other for the few remaining fresh local foods? The restaurants are not for sale. Only our votes are. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Britain announced an immigration policy Wednesday that would prevent unskilled immigrants from entering the country, requiring individuals to be English-speaking and to have a job. Concerns about the EU's immigration policy was one of the key factors leading to Brexit. The plan, intended to go into effect January 1st, 2021, will create a points-based system in which individuals need to meet a threshold based on their skills, qualifications, and potential salaries. President Trump and the White House announced a similar merit-based plan in May, giving preference to immigrants who speak English and have college degrees. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson will introduce the proposed changes in Parliament next month.
The Utah State Senate voted unanimously yesterday to decriminalize polygamy among consenting adults. Under current law, polygamy is classified as a third-degree felony, punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Under the Senate bill, punishments for plural marriage would be limited to fines of up to $750 and community service. Fraudulent bigamy, in which an individual obtains licenses to marry more than one spouse without their knowledge, or seeks to wed someone underage without her consent, remains a felony. Sponsors of the bill said the lower penalties would allow polygamists who are victims of crimes to come forward without fear of being prosecuted themselves, and would allow them to obtain access to critical services, such as medical or mental health care and education, without fear. Polygamy is a remnant of the early teachings of the Utah-based Mormon Church, though the church disavowed the practice in 1890 as a condition of Utah statehood. The bill now goes to the Utah legislature, where it will face more discussion and resistance. In areas across the West that have been affected by wildfires, snow melts faster and earlier in the spring. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story and its impacts with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As the climate warms, the western U.S. faces more intense wildfires and water shortages. And as one problem gets worse, so could the other. Kelly Gleason of Portland State University says that after a wildfire, snow that falls in the burned area melts faster and earlier in the spring.
When a forest burns, the canopy tends to get burned away, and so there's less shading on the snowpack, and more sunlight just makes its way through the canopy to the snow surface.
What's more, burned trees slough off charcoal and blackened bits of bark and needles.
Those particles darken the snowpack surface, and because the snowpack is darker, it absorbs a lot more of that additional sunlight energy.
Gleason and her team have found that on average, snowpack disappears 5 days earlier in forests that have burned. She says the effect
persists for at least a decade following the fire occurrence. So it's extensive and it's persistent across the West.
Many communities depend on slowly melting snowpack for water during the dry season. So if the snow melts too fast, it can mean dry conditions in months to come. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
A small fish is causing big trouble in Lake Superior. With more on that story, it's Eric Phillips with Current Cast.
A rough road ahead for the Great Lakes on this Current Cast. An aggressive little fish is threatening to disturb ecosystems throughout the Great Lakes. The Eurasian ruff is recognizable by its long spiny dorsal fin and frowning mouth. It's native to northern Europe and Asia and made its first appearance in Lake Superior in the 1980s, probably after catching a ride on a freighter from Europe. The quickly reproducing fish has become abundant in areas of Lake Superior, where it can outcompete native species for food and habitat. And now, it's found in Lakes Huron and Michigan, too. Anglers can help prevent the spread by cleaning boats and fishing gear before entering new waters, and by never using the invasive fish as bait. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Yasmin Kobanoglu and Dan Raphael. The producer is Nat Moon, and our engineer is Jeff Henderson. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Franny Halperin, Roz Brown, Antonia Gonzalez, Anthony Lizowitz, Eric Phillips, Rick Smith, and Jamie Sudler. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Nat Moon. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Voices from the Edge, progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective with your host, Joanne Hardesty. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fagerang, where he connects history with the latest world events. At 10, Flashpoints with investigative reporting from Dennis Bernstein. Then at 11:30, it's Radio Zine. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on donate. Stick around. Coming up right now is This Way Out, the LGBTQ audio magazine.
...37-year-old gay guy kissing his husband on stage next to Mr. Man Donald Trump. What's going to happen there?
In most of the country, schools exclude LGBTQ history. We don't learn about the civil rights struggles that our people have engaged in.
I'm so proud to stand here as a black, queer artist telling stories.
Ms. Garland, this is certainly for you.
I'm gonna love you again.
Daddy loves you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine.
I happen to be white, but in addition to our own mainly European-American history, in school, we're also taught the history of minorities, as we should be. Take African-American history. It starts in kindergarten with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, three-day weekend. Then we learn about the slave trade, slave ships, and the causes of the Civil War. We learn about the civil rights movement and heroes like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. This education does two things. First, it teaches all of us an important part of history that details the oppression African Americans have experienced and the work that has been done to overcome it. So we learn the history of struggle. And second, it helps young African American students to see their people in their education, which helps build a sense of identity and pride. But why aren't we taught about the Martin Luther King of LGBTQ? Why isn't Harvey Milk, the first openly gay elected official in a major American city, thought of as important in school curricula? In most of the country, schools exclude LGBTQ history. A few states, starting with California, have ended this exclusion. And here at Outcasting, we spoke with the California state senator who sponsored the bill. You can listen to it online, on our website, outcastingmedia.org. But in most of the country, students don't learn about the Stonewall Uprising in 1969, which has been called a turning point in the modern LGBTQ rights movement. We don't learn about the civil rights struggles that our people have engaged in, or the unimaginable losses caused by the AIDS crisis in the 80s and 90s. We don't learn that President Ronald Reagan didn't even say the word AIDS until several years into the epidemic. We don't learn about the medications that transformed AIDS from a nearly universally fatal disease into a chronic, manageable one. We don't learn about the long fights for marriage equality or transgender rights, and so much more. The opposition seems to be based on a false belief. If my kids are exposed, it will turn them gay. If it's put in their minds, the fairy gay mother will come and spray you with gay spray, and poof, there goes the straightness. LGBTQ people make up about 10% of the population. Being LGBTQ is something innate, something we're born with, not something we choose. Straight kids are not going to turn LGBTQ simply by learning about the existence of LGBTQ people and the oppression they've endured and the struggles they've engaged in to overcome that oppression. School is supposed to teach us mathematics and science and history. I want to learn about Harvey Milk, Marsha P. Johnson, Stonewall, and lots more of LGBTQ history. I want to learn about how my community is being oppressed, and I also want to learn about how we have created safe spaces within that as well. Where is this in my curriculum? It's not in it, that's for sure. And I live in New York, a supposedly progressive state. What effects does this cause? First, kids can be very insensitive, using the LGBTQ community as funny jokes, or meaning to insult someone, saying things such as, "That's so gay," "Your mom is gay," and "Your dad is trans." Kids will think that these things are funny because there is nobody teaching them that saying these things is not right or okay. LGBTQ people may be one of the groups it's most acceptable to discriminate against and ridicule. If schools ended the exclusion of LGBTQ history and culture from school curricula, non-LGBTQ students would learn about these things and begin to see that LGBTQ people have endured a great deal and that the LGBTQ community has been full of heroes fighting for equality. Something that's supposed to apply to all Americans, but doesn't. It also isolates LGBTQ students, like me, from the history of my own people. It prevents me from feeling a sense of context for my life. It makes me feel a bit adrift when it comes to being LGBTQ. In my own school, I have never learned about any LGBTQ history or issues. In class, nothing more has been mentioned than someone being gay. No more than that. They don't even mention things like that until junior high. I had also never seen a pride flag in classrooms until junior high as well. It wasn't until I joined Outcasting that I even heard of the Stonewall Uprising. In states that are not located on the coasts, this exclusion can have an even bigger impact because there isn't very much positive LGBTQ representation kids can be exposed to. If LGBTQ history and culture were taught in schools, young LGBTQ people who haven't come out yet could realize that they are not alone, and that there are other people like them, and that they have a strong, warm, and welcoming community. So it's probably not a big jump in logic to think that some LGBTQ youth suicide could be reduced if schools provided the education on LGBTQ history and issues that they should. It's outdated and inaccurate to think that people choose their sexual orientation and gender identity. The exclusion of LGBTQ history and issues from schools causes needless suffering. It's time for schools in all states to include education on LGBTQ history and issues, just as they do for other minorities.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, which produces public radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
I'm Stephen Fry. Listen to This Way Out, the international radio program for all our sexually diverse communities.
Movies is magic. Real life is tragic. It's time we get away to the movies and magic.
It was the queer movie Magic Wand that brought the 92nd Annual Academy Awards to life during the electrifying telecast opener with Janelle Monáe featuring a cameo by Billy Porter.
It's time to come alive, 'cause the Oscar is so wide. It's time to come alive. Oh, now let's go out.
I'm still standing better than I ever been. Looking like a true survivor. Feeling like a little kid. I'm still dead after all this time. Picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. Oh.
Tonight we celebrate all the amazing talent in this room. We celebrate all the women who directed phenomenal films. And I'm so proud to stand here as a Black queer artist telling stories. Happy Black History Month.
I'm gonna love you again. Check me out on the very best friend. From the wind to the mountain. Like a bird that broke and ran.
Only one outperformer won an Oscar on February 9th, and he won for Best Song with his longtime songwriting partner. Each thanked the filmmakers and their respective spouses.
And the Oscar goes to Sir Elton John and Verity Toppin for I'm Gonna Love Me Again from Rocketman.
Wow, this doesn't suck. I'll be brief. Okay, thank you, Academy, fellow nominees. This, needless to say, most of this goes to the people that were involved in Rocketman. A little bit of this is in every one of their hearts. David Furnish, your tenacity and dedication has driven this train all the way here. Heather Taupin, you have my back 24 hours a day. Your beauty, grace, good humor, just, I love you, all right? And being here with this guy, I don't even know, I don't have words for it. I mean, this is just justification for 53 years of just hammering it out and doing what we do. And so, thank you all.
I've got to be very quick because we're going over time. Thank you to Bernie, who's been the constant thing in my life. When I was screwed up, when I was normal, he's always been there for me. David, I love you so much. Matthew Vaughn, Taron Egerton, what a performance. Giles Martin, for the music. This is a dream for us. We've never been nominated before for anything like this. Thank you to the Academy. Thank you to my fellow nominees for all the great work you do. There's some amazing talent in this room tonight. And wow. And to my beautiful boys who are watching this in Sydney, Zachary and Elijah, how much do I love you? Love you. Daddy loves you. Bye.
Renee Zellweger took home the Best Actress Oscar for her title role in Judy and paid tribute to the iconic star.
This past year of conversations celebrating Judy Garland across genders and, across generations and across cultures has been a really cool reminder that it's that our heroes unite us, you know? The best among us, who inspire us to find the best in ourselves. When they unite us, when we look to our heroes, we agree, you know, and that matters. Neil Armstrong, Sally Ride, Dolores Huerta, Venus and Serena and Selena, Bob Dylan, Scorsese, Fred Rogers, Harriet Tubman. We agree on our teachers. And we agree on our courageous men and women in uniform who serve. We agree on our first responders and firefighters. When we celebrate our heroes, we, you know, we're reminded of who we are as one people, united. And though Judy Garland did not receive this honor in her time, I am certain that this moment is an extension of the celebration of her legacy that began on our film set and is also representative of the fact that her legacy of unique exceptionalism and inclusivity and, generosity of spirit, it transcends any one artistic achievement. Ms. Garland, you are certainly among the heroes who unite and define us, and this is certainly for you. I am so grateful. Thank you so much, everybody. Good night.
His happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow. Why, oh, why can't I?
That was Best Actress Oscar winner Renee Zellweger from the Judy soundtrack. And that's all from the pink carpet in Hollywood. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael Taylor Gray and Marlena Bond, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Outcasters Lil and Sarah, produced by Mark Sofus. Nona Hendricks, Van Dyke Parks, and Renee Zellweger performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets funded the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Clinton, James Kennedy, and Richard Merton Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KPOV Bend, Oregon, WRFI Ithaca, New York, 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Do stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at kboo.fm. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective, from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season features artists who will be performing at this year's PDX Jazz Festival: Branford Marcellus, David Sanborn, Kenny Barron, Miguel Zenon, James Francis, and Kenny Garrett. The program is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium. It can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu at kboo.fm, clicking on Audio, then Podcast, and then scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at kboo.fm.
Thank you, baby. I just wanna take a little time out to you. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. And we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is almost exactly 6 o'clock. Coming up is Rural Roots Rising. I said it again. Followed by Free Culture Radio at 6:30, and then Hard Knock Radio to follow. Here we go.
Welcome back to Rural Roots Rising by the Rural Organizing Project. If this is your first time listening, Rural Roots Rising is a monthly radio show and podcast created by and for rural Oregonians who are creatively and courageously building stronger and more vibrant communities for a just democracy. Today we'll be sharing a story about the power of thousands of committed people who join together across communities and faiths to respond to a human rights crisis in rural Oregon. In this month's episode, It Takes All of Us.
So I just, the next day, I drove to Sheridan, just on my own. And there were prison guards there, and they stopped me there, and they were like, "Oh, ma'am, what can we help you with?" And I just pulled my window down and I was like, I hear that there are men from India and I would like to see what I can do to help them. And they're like, oh, they were actually laughing in my face. Like, man, you can't go in there.